More Idaho Matters now from the studios of Boise State Public Radio News. I'm Gemma Gaudet. Across the United States, kids are struggling with their mental health, and here in Idaho, we're seeing the same problem, one which made even more stark after the suicide of four Boise students just late last year. Well, now as the community joins together in support of our kids, one group is working on a way to address mental health struggles of our youth before they reach a crisis point. So joining us now to talk more about these efforts is Megan Smith. She is the Director for Communities for Youth. Megan, thanks so much for coming on the program today.
Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
So can you begin, Megan, by telling us a little bit more about Communities for Youth and how it got started?
Yeah, sure. So Communities for Youth is an Idaho-based organization, and we focus on what's called upstream prevention, which means we're working with everyone in the community to build the best possible communities for kids, really trying to build communities that are high in what we call protective factors and low in what we call risk factors that might lead to poor behavior or other type of health outcomes for young people.
So I want to talk a little bit more about this approach. As you mentioned, this upstream prevention. Can you go a little bit more in depth about this and maybe kind of give us a visual picture of what you mean by that?
Yeah, I can. So we are working in a few communities already throughout Idaho. And what it sort of looks like is first bringing people together around the common idea of how do we make this community the best possible place for kids? And then the next step is really thinking through how do we understand fully the real-time needs of young people. So in this state, we no longer participate in the Youth Risk Behavior Survey, which used to be the way that we understood the experiences of young people. And we do not have that. So Communities for Youth has tried to stand in that gap. And what we do is collect either survey information from young people or focus groups. And basically, we're trying to understand in real time, what are the key things happening in young people's environments that may or may not be leading to, in this case in Idaho, poor mental health outcomes. And so we look across multiple domains, across an individual, also across their family experiences, their peer or friend experiences, their experiences at school and in the larger community. And once we collect that data, then we can run some analyses to think about what are sort of the red flags, if you will, or what are the opportunity areas where we see, for instance, in Boise, just an example from here, is that we saw really obviously in the data that the lack of social connection was a key factor in both our young people's depressive symptoms and also their suicidal ideation. So then that allows us to do the next step, which is with the community, we share that data back out so they can really see it and understand, again, in real time for young people, what's going on for them and what are their needs. And then as a community, we decide to make some goals. So here in Boise, we are laser focused on social connection. And in fact, social connection comes up as a key factor in many of the other communities we're in as well. And then the last part of our process is helping to sort of marry, if you will, or bring in the research and evidence from outside of our community that we think informs how to increase connection for young people, and then working in our action teams to figure out what actually resonates with our community members and what do they really want to get going.
Can you talk a little bit also about when you look at protective factors versus risk factors?
Sure.
And why is that important? Because I think a lot of times we seem to focus so much on like, okay, who's at risk, right? And what are those risk factors? But I really like this idea of, well, what are the protective factors as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And I love this question because it helps me sort of emphasize this upstream prevention jargon again. So often when we consider mental health problems as community members or concerned parents, we think, gosh, I don't know anything about mental health. I'm not a mental health care provider. What might I be able to do? Or we immediately think of, well, if it's a mental health problem, we need to have a mental health program or practitioner or speaker. But really what we know about mental health outcomes and a host of other things that impact young people is that there are conditions in a community. So for instance, you talked about the difference between risk and protective factors. A risk factor for poor mental health outcomes might be something like having experienced violence, either in your own personal relationships or in your family relationships. A risk factor might be having many friends who also are feeling like they are experiencing depression, right? So those are examples of risk factors. There's a lot more than that. There are also protective factors. So a protective factor might be close relationships with either your parents or another trusted adult, such as a teacher or coach in your, or an aunt or a neighbor. Those kind of things can be extremely protective. Other things that are protective is having a really strong sense of who you are as a person. So giving opportunities for young people to explore exactly who they are and really figure that out at this age is another great protective factor.
So Megan, how important is it that we talk about all of this with our kids? And I ask this question because, you know, just anecdotally in my own house, I mean, my kids tell me I talk about it too much, and that they're always like, "Mom, we know,
yeah,
like mine too, you know, Mom, I'm fine." Like, and it's like, "Mom, we're fine. You think we're going to harm ourselves all the time? Like, if something happens," and I mean, at the same time, I would almost rather have that be have them roll their eyes at me because I am over talking about this than maybe not talking about it at all. But I will put this one caveat on it. When I was growing up, and even in the media for so long, there was this idea that you don't talk about these things because if you do, we're going to set kids up to harm themselves. And so it's almost like having to unlearn those behaviors, I think, that so many of us as parents grew up with. So with that said, Megan, I mean, what is your advice then for parents and how we go about talking about this stuff with our kids?
Yeah. So I love this question because I will say it's complex. And I think that's why so many parents and other community members are sort of trying to figure out what the right way through it is, because there is a little bit of nuance. For instance, suicidal ideation is in fact contagious. Right. So that means that if we are talking about it broadly and we're saying, oh, suicide is happening all the time and young people who are experiencing depression often choose suicide, that's actually a very dangerous conversation to have. Okay. However, if we actually suspect that someone is struggling with suicide, we should absolutely ask them, and we should ask them as directly as possible. So many people think when a young person is very like in crisis and they're struggling that it would do more damage to call out suicide. But in fact, we know that that is extremely protective. Getting something, particularly out of a young person's brain, out of their brain and into language and out into the open, can help. Instead of it ruminating and circulating around, it can help it get out. So if you suspect a young person is experiencing extreme depression, or they're thinking about suicide, having a very direct conversation with them about that is great. Now, some people freak out at that moment because they're like, oh gosh, I don't know what to do if a young person says, yes, I'm thinking about suicide. The great thing is we have 988. You can text it, you can call it, you can look it up on the internet, and they will actually, even if you yourself are not suicidal ideating, they will walk you through. And also you can do sort of like what we call a warm handoff to their folks on their line. And they are trained to help walk someone through who is actively thinking about suicide. So you don't have to be the expert. You just have to be the one who cares. Now, to that larger conversation of like, how do we talk to our kids who we're not necessarily thinking they're in crisis, but we want to have the conversation open. That is really, again, part of this more like removed from the actual mental health thing, right? So we can talk about our own feelings as parents and role model that. Gosh, I'm feeling really stressed out right now. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to actually just go take a walk, right? Those kind of conversations can help our young people see, oh, these are ways we can cope with these naturally occurring negative emotions, right? All of us are going to experience ups and downs. And so I think the conversation we can be having with our young people is having low lows, feeling extremely depressed is a pretty normal experience for everyone, particularly when you're a teenager and you're growing that emotional part of your brain. Those low lows are normative and they can last even 2 weeks, right? And so I think we help having the conversation with young people that When we are feeling sad or down or however we want to talk about it, it does not mean we are immediately a clinically depressed person. It means we're experiencing depressive symptoms, and that's a pretty normal thing to experience as a human. And we can help them see and find their own ways for how to get out of that, right? For some people, it's getting outside. For some people, it's laughing with a friend or a family member. For some people, it's journaling or listening to uplifting music or taking a really hot or really cold shower, right? And so if we as parents help young people notice, hey, looks like you're a little sad, and also help role model when we're feeling sad or stressed out, what we are doing that's healthy, productive, positive coping, we can really help our young people. And then I know I'm saying a lot, but the other thing I will say about these tough conversations is that we really, as parents, need to be proactive. We can't wait until we think our kids are struggling. What we have to do is keep those communication lines open. And one of the easiest and yet in practice so hard for myself as a parent thing to do is when our young people are sharing things with us, trying just to listen and not to relate or give advice. So often I use this phrase, and it's not mine. It's another amazing professional, but it's this phrase of, would you like me to just listen, or would you like some advice on this? And I've been trying to practice this with my own daughter, and I find it's helping us open up our communication, and she's willing to share more if she just wants me to listen. And I say, okay, I'm just going to listen. And so I think, again, we don't have to be necessarily talking about mental health to provide the safe space for kids to talk to us about mental health.
No, I so agree with you. And I try to put that in practice and I fail many times.
It's so hard. And I just want to say, parents, just give yourself grace. This is a hard thing.
It really is. And I mean, and one of the things that I've noticed, you know, with my, because I have a teenager and a tween, is, you know, I have talked to them about, like, look, it's normal to feel sad. It is just normal. Right. Mm-hmm. And, but if you are sad for, you know, weeks on end, then you need to tell us and we need to talk about it. Right.
Yes.
But it's, but it's kind of like, and every emotion is okay to have. Right.
Yes.
And especially I think with these teenagers is it's one of those things where it's like, sometimes they can't see that there is light at the end of the tunnel, and it's our job to help them see that there's light at the end of the tunnel.
Correct. And to say, you know, part of life is experiencing these moments where we feel like there is no light, where there is no out. And then as we grow up, you know, as adults, I think we have experienced enough moments where we felt there is no light, and then we made it to the other side and we've experienced joy. And, you know, that's something to share with young people. And it's hard, you know, as a young person, you maybe haven't had that experience. So you're feeling stuck in this very dark or sad place. Yeah. And there's no way for you to believe that there's something on the other side. And so I often tell parents, you know, there's no way we can make sure they know there's light, but there is a way we can stay as close as possible. And sometimes that's just quiet closeness, you know, and sometimes it's just remaining close to that young person. And, you know, again, if you feel out of your depths as a parent, or if your child feels like they can't move through it, then it's time to seek additional help. And 988 is a great place, or, you know, a school counselor is a great place to start, just to get some idea of to check in about it.
One of the things that I really love that you're doing in your organization are these listening sessions. And I know you mentioned at the beginning of our conversation about, you know, getting data, right? Since we don't have the official data anymore in the state of Idaho, you've had to figure out ways to get this data. And so why not go directly to the source, right? So can you talk to us a little bit about these listening sessions and maybe what you're looking for when you have these sessions?
Yeah. So in the beginning, we started with adults in our communities because, in Idaho and in the nation, there are a variety of experiences and opinions about mental health and whether or not it's safe to talk about it and to figure out about it with our young people. And so we really do start in community, just building trust and understanding of what are the pervasive understandings of mental health around that. But my favorite part is when we get to talk to young people. And the reason it's so powerful is because when we collect data, we might see in the data analysis, for instance, in the statistics, we might see social connection is, or the lack of social connection is driving depression or suicide ideation. Or we see, for instance, high levels of stress driving depression or suicidal ideation. And, that's information, but I feel like it's not the nuance of it, right? So then what we do is we go back and talk to young people in focus groups, and we say things like, hey, it looks like stress is something you and some of your peers are experiencing. Can you talk to us about what that stress is? And that really allows us to build some community awareness about, okay, here's the things that are actively stressing our young people. And are there opportunities for us as a community to come around that and mitigate it?
Before I let you go, Megan, I think this is such a heavy topic. And I feel like in wake of the last few years and in wake of what happened earlier in the fall in the Boise area with these suicides, it can feel like as we talk about, is there a light at the end of the tunnel? I think there can sometimes feel like there is no light when it comes to youth and mental health and suicidal ideations. With that said, within your research and your practice, are there actual tangible examples that this works? And if we stay on this path as a community, that we will get to that light?
Yeah, that's why, again, I mentioned I have a kid. She's in this population of concern, youth. She's just about to be in her teens. And yes, upstream prevention, I believe in deeply. And the reason is because I'm part of a research team that works on the Icelandic prevention model. And they primarily use that for substance use prevention in young people. But it is the most successful ever measured approach to not only decreasing youth substance use, but also holding that decrease. So over time, now they've been able to hold it for 20 years. They were the highest substance use rates of youth in Europe, and now they are the lowest, and they have maintained that for more than 20 years, which is incredible. And this is why I believe that it can work here. I will also say, in one of our communities we've been in for 3 years, we started with, unfortunately, the overwhelming number that 66% of their kids were experiencing moderate to severe depression symptoms. And that is now, I'm proud to report, and again, not because of our work, but because of the amazing work that the community has done, it is down to 24%. So there is some evidence that this approach works. And the amazing thing about this approach is what it does is it just helps keep the community's attention on young people rather than chasing the trend of the day, right? Like, it was Tide Pops, now it's vapes, blah, blah, blah. Instead, it's how do we build the best possible community for kids in which mental health crisis or substance use or you name it, health outcome is just less likely to occur. And I will tell you that I got chills when I tell you that quick drop from 66 to 24% in depression. And I also will tell you that there are plenty of anecdotes of communities really coming around an issue and connecting about how do we make this the best possible community for kids. So with the small experiences we've had so far in Idaho and also that larger success of the Icelandic prevention model, I do believe that this is our way to hope and light, as you say.
Well, I love that. And I just so appreciate that actual tangible evidence that this is and can work as long as we all come together as a community and do the work that's needed. So I really appreciate you taking time today to talk with us about this.
Yeah, I am grateful to be here. And I'll just say the last thing, just put a plug in for social connection. So we are seeing this pop up as a main driver for depression in all the communities so far that we've surveyed in Idaho. And so if you're an adult right now, worried about the youth mental health crisis, but not knowing where to start, you can start in your own family and in the young people in your network, whether it be in your neighborhood or on your kids' team. If you don't have kids, you can still be a safe, trusted adult and work on helping young people connect to themselves, connect to other young people, and connect to safe, trusted adults. And there are resources on our website that give you tips and tricks for doing that. And that's a great place to start.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Megan. We'll make sure we put a link to your website on our website, BoiseStatePublicRadio.org. We've been talking with Megan Smith, the Director for Communities for Youth, about the mental health struggles that we are seeing in our kids and what we can do to see the light at the end of the tunnel with all of this. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.